A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants us to look at the most dismal television shows ever produced, both historically and in the past few years. He's asking whether there's anything comparable to the worst movies ever made. Genre. You know, the so bad it's good fan communities that have grown up around films like The Room or Plan 9 from Outer Space, but for TV. And if so, what are the luminaries? Which sitcoms, teledramas, or docuseries have drawn unusually scathing critical reception? And are there any long-running shows that just kept going far past their sell-by date?
This is a genuinely rich question, and it's trickier than the movie equivalent for a few structural reasons. Movies are one and done. You sit through 90 minutes of disaster. You can catalog the whole thing, host a midnight screening. Television is cumulative. A bad show can be bad in its bones from episode 1, or it can curdle over 8 seasons. The failure modes are different.
Right, and the commitment required to truly appreciate a terrible TV show is much higher. Nobody's hosting a single evening viewing party for all 200 episodes of a sitcom that lost the plot in season 4.
Yet, there absolutely is a canon. There are shows that critics and audiences have collectively decided represent something uniquely misbegotten. Some are infamous, one-season catastrophes, some ran for a bafflingly long time. And some occupy this weird space where they were popular but critically reviled, which is its own category of interesting.
The nobody I know admits to watching this, yet it somehow has 11 seasons. Category.
The CBS procedural paradox. So let's build this out properly. I think we need to talk about a few different species of bad television. There's the ambitious disaster, the prestige show that face planted. There's the cynical cash-in. There's the show that started strong and decayed. And then there's the inexplicable long runner.
Let's start with the ambitious disasters, because those tend to be the most fascinating. What are the canonical examples?
I'd put Heil Honey I'm Home at the top of that list, and I need to explain this one because it sounds like a joke, but it was real.
I've heard of this. The Hitler sitcom.
The Hitler sitcom. It was a British production from 1990, and I should pause here and say yes, 1990, not 1975, not some pre-war relic. Someone in a commissioning meeting at British Satellite Broadcasting greenlit a sitcom about Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun living next door to a Jewish couple, and the entire premise was a parody of 1950s American domestic sitcoms. The title sequence had a cheerful jingle. The set looked like I Love Lucy. It aired exactly one episode before being pulled.
One episode is almost impressive. It takes effort to get something canceled that fast.
The thing is, the production values weren't amateurish. The actors were competent. It was a fully realized, deeply considered bad idea that made it all the way through production and onto television before anyone seemed to say, "Wait, what are we doing here?"
That's the thing about ambitious disasters. They're not lazy. Lazy failures are boring. Ambitious failures require a whole chain of people to look at something and say, "Yes, this works," over and over until it's too late.
Another one in that category, the 2021 HBO Max series, The Prince. Animated satire about the British royal family, told from the perspective of Prince George, who's a child. The voice cast was stacked: Orlando Bloom, Sophie Turner, Dan Stevens. But the central comic device was making an 8-year-old into a catty, gossipy, adult-voiced commentator on his own family. Critics called it mean-spirited in a way that felt unpleasant to watch. It got one season, quietly vanished.
There's a line between satire and just being cruel to a kid, even a fictionalized version of a kid, and it sounds like they didn't so much cross it as set up permanent residence on the wrong side.
The Guardian called it the worst television show of the year. And I think that points to something. When ambitious shows fail, they often fail because the core premise has a rot at the center that nobody caught, or nobody wanted to catch.
What about the cynical cash-in? Because I feel like that's where a lot of the truly dismal television lives.
And here I have to talk about the platonic ideal of this category, the Chevy Chase Show.
The late night talk show.
Launched in September 1993, canceled after 5 weeks. Fox gave Chevy Chase a late night show to compete with Letterman and Leno. It was a disaster of almost mythical proportions. Chase was visibly uncomfortable, the interviews were awkward, the comedy fell flat. The Washington Post called it dead on arrival. The New York Times said Chase seemed spectacularly ill at ease.
5 weeks is fast, even by the standards of failed talk shows. Usually networks let those limp along for at least a season to save face.
It was so bad they couldn't, and this is the cynical cash-in part. Fox wasn't trying to make good television. They were trying to buy a brand name and slot it into a format. They thought Chevy Chase's name recognition from Saturday Night Live and the vacation movies would carry a format that requires an entirely different skill set. It didn't.
The late night format is actually brutal for revealing whether someone is funny or just well edited.
It's a crucible, and Chase wasn't the only one. The Magic Hour with Magic Johnson in 1998 lasted 8 weeks. Pat Sajak had a late night show in 1989 that ran for 15 months but was critically savaged the entire time. The late night graveyard is full of people who were famous for something else and got handed a desk and a band.
The Pat Sajak one is interesting because 15 months is actually a decent run for a failure, but nobody remembers it fondly. It's just...
Which is its own kind of failure. A show so forgettable it doesn't even achieve ironic nostalgia. And that brings us to something important. There's a difference between shows that are memorably bad and shows that are just nothing. The nothing shows are harder to build a fan community around because there's nothing to latch onto.
The Room is quotable. Plan 9 has Ed Wood's whole aesthetic. What's the TV equivalent? What are the shows where the failure is so textured and specific that people actually seek them out?
Cop Rock is the canonical answer here.
Of course it is.
Stephen Bochco, 1990. He just created Hill Street Blues and El Law and Doogie Howser. He was one of the most powerful producers in television. And he convinced ABC to let him make a police procedural where the characters periodically break into song. Original musical numbers. In a gritty cop show.
The elevator pitch that makes you say, I'm sorry, what?
It wasn't a parody. It was entirely sincere. You'd have a scene about a drug bust, and then the suspect would start singing a blues number about his life choices, and then the detective would respond in song, and then they'd cut to a courtroom where the jury was doing a gospel number.
I've seen clips. It's disorienting. Your brain can't reconcile the tones.
It ran for 11 episodes, won 2 Emmys actually, for songwriting, but it's become a shorthand for television hubris. And people do seek it out. There are Cop Rock viewing parties. It's on DVD. The failure is so specific and so committed that it's become entertaining on its own terms.
That's the key, isn't it? The worst of the worst TV that people actually celebrate is never half-hearted. It's always someone's uncompromised vision, and that vision just happens to be bewildering.
That connects to what we said in our episode on prestige flops in film, the sincerity threshold. A show that's cynically bad is just unpleasant. A show where someone believed they were making something groundbreaking, and that belief carried them past every warning sign. That's what creates the kind of failure people want to gather around and appreciate.
Like adopting a feral cat.
Let me give you another one in that vein. In 2023, there was an Australian reality series called The Summit. Contestants had to climb a mountain carrying a share of $1 million, and if anyone fell behind, the group had to vote on whether to leave them, and their money, behind. Produced by Channel 9, heavily promoted and savaged. Critics called it sadistic without being compelling. The Sydney Morning Herald said it was the most mean-spirited reality show in years.
Reality TV is a whole subgenre of this conversation, because the failure mode is often ethical rather than aesthetic.
There was a 2005 Fox reality show called Who's Your Daddy, where an adopted woman had to identify her biological father from a group of men to win money. It aired one episode before being pulled after an outcry from adoption advocacy groups.
That's not a show. That's a psychological experiment that escaped from an ethics board review.
Fox specialized in this for a while. Married by America in 2003, arranged marriages by viewer vote. Seriously, Dude, I'm Gay from 2004, a prank show where straight men tried to convince their friends they were gay. Both pulled almost immediately.
The early 2000s were a lawless wasteland.
I think that's worth noting because these shows aren't fun bad. They're not Cop Rock. Nobody's hosting a Who's Your Daddy. there's a line where bad tips over into exploitative, and that stuff doesn't get reclaimed as ironic entertainment. It just gets buried.
Which is probably healthy. So let's talk about the other big category. The long-running shows past their sell-by date. That's a different kind of bad. It's not a spectacular flame-out. It's a slow decline where the show keeps going long after whatever made it work has evaporated.
The Simpsons is the unavoidable example here, but it's complicated. The Simpsons has been on the air since 1989. Its classic era, roughly seasons 3 through 9, is arguably the greatest run in television comedy history. But it's now in its 37th season, and the critical consensus for at least the past two decades has been that it's a shadow of its former self. The term Zombie Simpsons has become common in critical discourse.
That's evocative.
It's a term coined by a critic named Charlie Sweatpants, a pseudonym, on the Dead Homer Society blog. The argument is that the show stopped being The Simpsons around season 11 or 12, and has been something else ever since. A show that looks like The Simpsons and sounds like The Simpsons, but has none of the heart or wit. The characters became caricatures of themselves. The guest stars became the point rather than the story. The satire got toothless.
Yet it's still on. Still making money.
Because it's an institution. The merchandise alone is worth billions. And this is where TV differs from film. A movie franchise can run out of steam after 3 or 4 entries, but a TV show can just keep going as long as the economics work, regardless of the creative decline.
Grey's Anatomy is in this category too, isn't it?
Season 23, still going. Most of the original cast is gone. The show has cycled through so many characters and plot lines that it's essentially a different show wearing the same name, and it still gets decent ratings. But the critical conversation around it has been, this should have ended for at least a decade.
There's something almost admirable about it. The sheer refusal to die.
The Walking Dead is another one, a cultural phenomenon in its early seasons. By the end, the ratings had collapsed. The critical reception was tepid at best, and the whole thing had become a franchise maintenance exercise. But it ran for 11 seasons and spawned multiple spin-offs.
This is where the worst TV question gets interesting, because none of these shows are bad. In the way Heil Honey I'm Home was bad. They're bad in a specific institutional way. They're shows that forgot why they existed.
That's beautifully put. They're shows that forgot why they existed. And I think that's a uniquely television problem. A film has to justify its existence as a single work. A TV show can coast on momentum for years. By the time anyone notices the quality is gone, the show has become too big to cancel.
What about the international angle Daniel mentioned? Are there notorious failures from other countries that deserve a spot in this conversation?
In India, there was a 2008 reality show called Sakka Samna, an adaptation of the American show The Moment of Truth, which was itself controversial. Contestants were hooked up to a polygraph and asked increasingly invasive personal questions in front of their families. It was pulled after massive public backlash. The Indian press called it cultural degradation.
The polygraph as entertainment format is its own genre of bad decision-making.
In Japan, there's a fascinating case, a 2012 anime series called School Days. It was adapted from a visual novel that had multiple story paths, including some very dark ones. The anime adaptation chose the darkest possible ending, and it was so shocking and bleak that it became infamous. When the final episode was preempted by news coverage of a real-life violent incident, someone at the network made the spectacularly poor decision to replace it with footage of a scenic boat ride, while viewers waited for the conclusion.
Wait, they just showed a boat?
On calm water. The phrase, "nice boat," became a meme in anime fandom that persists to this day. It's now shorthand for content that's been pulled or censored in a way that's more memorable than the content itself.
The accidental avant-garde. That's incredible.
In France, there was a 2021 Netflix series called Christmas Flow, a holiday romance about a rapper and a journalist. French critics were merciless. Le Monde called it un désastre festif, a festive disaster. The dialogue was so stilted it became a running joke on French social media, canceled after one season.
The holiday romance genre seems particularly prone to this. The combination of tight production schedules and the requirement to hit specific emotional beats produces a lot of content that feels algorithmically generated.
The Hallmark Christmas movie industrial complex. That's a whole separate episode, but yes, the volume is so high that some truly bizarre things slip through.
What about long-running international shows that overstayed their welcome? Any equivalents to The Simpsons phenomenon?
Coronation Street in the UK has been running since 1960. Over 60 years. It's an institution, and it's had periods of creative decline that British critics have documented extensively. But it's also had revivals and strong periods. It's more of a sine wave than a steady decline.
A sine wave is actually more interesting than a straight line down. It means there's something resilient in the format.
That's what makes the worst TV conversation different from the worst film conversation. Television is a living thing. It can get sick and recover. It can mutate into something unrecognizable and then mutate back. A bad movie is frozen in amber. A bad TV show is a process.
Let's talk about recent failures. What's been critically savaged in the past few years?
There's a 2024 Netflix series called The Acolyte that became a flashpoint. A Star Wars series set in the High Republic era, it received unusually polarized reception. Some critics praised its ambition, but the audience scores were brutal. It sits at around 18% on Rotten Tomatoes' audience metric. The show became a battleground in the broader culture war conversation around Star Wars, which is its own exhausting phenomenon.
The problem with that kind of reception is that it's almost impossible to evaluate the show on its own terms. It becomes a proxy war.
That's increasingly common. Shows get caught in these online maelstroms where the actual quality of the writing or acting is almost beside the point. But there are also shows that fail on straightforward terms. In 2023, there was a Fox sitcom called Animal Control starring Joel McHale. It wasn't terrible. It actually got a second season. But it was so aggressively mediocre that critics seemed almost offended by its existence. The Hollywood Reporter called it a comedy that feels like it was written by an AI trained on discarded pilots.
That's a brutal line.
It speaks to something about the current television landscape. There's so much content now. Over 600 scripted series were produced in 2024, that the sin isn't always being bad. Sometimes it's just being unnecessary. A show that exists because a platform needed content, not because anyone had a story to tell.
The filler content phenomenon. Streaming services padding their libraries.
That creates a different kind of bad show. It's not the spectacular hubris of Cop Rock or the ethical catastrophe of Who's Your Daddy. It's the beige wallpaper of television. Competently produced, adequately acted, and completely devoid of any reason to exist.
Which is somehow more depressing than a genuine disaster. At least a disaster is interesting.
This is why the So Bad It's Good community for television is smaller and more fragmented than the film equivalent. Most bad TV isn't fun bad, it's just boring bad. You can't ironically enjoy something that puts you to sleep.
Are there exceptions? Shows that are fun to watch because of how badly they miss the mark.
The Room of Television is probably a show called The Cape.
I don't know this one.
A superhero series about a cop who's framed for murder and becomes a masked vigilante, trained by a circus troupe. He wears a cape that gives him superpowers. The cape is the hero. The show is called The Cape. It ran for 10 episodes.
Trained by a circus troupe.
A circus troupe led by Keith David, who is a great actor, and delivers every line with total commitment. The show is completely sincere. It's not winking at the audience. It believes in the cape. And it's spectacularly entertaining because of that sincerity.
This sounds amazing.
It's watchable in a way that transcends its quality. The fight scenes are choreographed like a community theater production of a comic book. The dialogue includes lines like, and I'm quoting here, "You're not a hero, you're just a cop in a cape." To which the hero responds, "Maybe that's all a hero is."
That's almost profound in its lack of profundity.
That's what makes it work as an ironic viewing experience. It's trying so hard to be meaningful, and it lands about 3 feet short every time. But it never stops trying. The commitment is total.
Are there viewing communities around the Cape?
Small ones, but yes. There are Reddit threads, YouTube retrospectives. It's not The Room. It hasn't achieved that level of cultural penetration, but it's probably the closest thing television has to a genuine cult classic of failure.
What about shows that are bad in a way that's actively enjoyable to dissect, where the failure is intellectual rather than aesthetic?
Oh, this is a great category. Let me give you one. Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. It premiered in 2010 and is still producing episodes. The premise is that extraterrestrials visited Earth in antiquity and influenced human civilization. Every episode follows the same formula. Present a historical mystery, suggest aliens as the explanation, interview someone with author or researcher in their title, and end with a rhetorical question.
The rhetorical question as evidentiary standard.
Could it be that the pyramids were landing pads for interstellar spacecraft? Ancient astronaut theorists say yes. That's not a parody, that's an actual line from the show. And there's a whole community of people who watch it not because they believe it, but because the rhetorical contortions are so elaborate and so consistent that it becomes a kind of performance art.
The ancient astronaut theorists say yes. Construction is fascinating. It creates the illusion of consensus by naming a group that doesn't exist outside the show's own casting process.
It's been remarkably influential. The show has spawned imitators, parodies, and a specific kind of online skepticism where people break down episodes frame by frame. There's a YouTube channel called Ancient Aliens Debunked that has millions of views. The show created its own oppositional viewing community.
That's a unique achievement. Creating a show so flawed that debunking it becomes a genre of entertainment in itself.
That brings us to something important. The worst television isn't always the least watchable. Sometimes it's the most watchable for all the wrong reasons. Ancient Aliens is compelling because the reasoning is so transparently broken that your brain can't stop trying to fix it.
Like a puzzle where all the pieces are from different boxes, but someone's insisting they form a coherent picture.
There's a whole ecosystem of this kind of thing. Reality shows where the premise collapses under scrutiny. Competition shows where the judging makes no sense. Talk shows where the host is visibly disengaged. The common thread is that the failure is structural. It's not a bad episode. It's a bad idea that keeps generating bad episodes.
Let's talk about scripted failures from the past few years that had that structural problem. What's a recent show where the core concept was just broken?
There was a 2022 Netflix series called Blockbuster, a workplace comedy set in the last Blockbuster video store. The cast was strong, Randall Park, Melissa Fumero. But the show couldn't decide whether it was a nostalgic celebration of the pre-streaming era or a comedy about people clinging to an obsolete business model. It tried to do both and did neither well, canceled after one season.
The premise itself is a problem because the central tension is, this business is dying, which means the show has a built-in expiration date. You can't root for the characters to succeed because their success is historically impossible.
The show never figured out how to make that tragic or funny. It just kind of sat there, being pleasant and inconsequential. That's the streaming era failure mode, the show that's too inoffensive to hate, but too bland to remember.
Which is somehow worse than being memorably terrible. At least Cop Rock gave us something to talk about.
Cop Rock gave us a murder suspect singing a power ballad in an interrogation room. That's a gift. Blockbuster gave us Randall Park looking mildly concerned about late fees.
The spectrum of television failure is vast. We've got the ambitious disaster, the cynical cash-in, the ethical catastrophe, the zombie long-runner, the filler content, and the premise that was broken from day one.
I think we should add one more category, the show that's bad because of external circumstances. Production disasters, network interference, cast departures that gutted the premise.
What's the canonical example there?
There's a British series called Bone Kickers from 2008, a BBC drama about archaeologists who solve mysteries. The premise sounds like it could work. It's basically CSI with trowels. But the execution was so over the top that it became a laughingstock. One episode involved the archaeologists discovering that the true cross from the crucifixion was buried under a car park in England. Another had them finding evidence that the Knights Templar had reached America before Columbus.
Archaeologists discovering increasingly improbable things under car parks. That sounds like a parody of itself.
It ran for 6 episodes. The Guardian called it the worst drama the BBC has produced in years. And the thing is, the writers were talented. They'd worked on Spooks and Life on Mars. But something about the format and the pressure to make archaeology exciting produced this bizarre hybrid of history and fantasy that satisfied nobody.
The pressure to make something exciting often produces the opposite. Desperation is visible on screen.
That's something you see in a lot of bad television, the sweat. You can tell when a show is trying too hard. The jokes are too loud, the plot twists are too frequent, the emotional beats are too manipulative. It's the television equivalent of someone who's trying to be the life of the party, and you just want them to calm down.
If someone wanted to curate a viewing list, a tasting menu of the worst television has to offer, what would you put on it?
I'd organize it by category. For the ambitious disaster, Heil Honey, I'm Home and Cop Rock. For the cynical cash-in, The Chevy Chase Show. For the ethical catastrophe, Who's Your Daddy? For the zombie long runner, take your pick of later season Simpsons or Grey's Anatomy. For the broken premise, Bone Kickers. For the fun bad cult classic, The Cape. And for the fascinating intellectual failure, Ancient Aliens.
That's a solid syllabus. And I'd add one more. For the so aggressively mediocre, it becomes fascinating. Category. I'd suggest looking at some of the Netflix original holiday movies. Not any specific one, but the genre as a whole. Watch three in a row and you start to notice the patterns. The same pot beats. The same character types. The same small town with a suspiciously robust Christmas economy.
The Christmas industrial complex. And you're right, the patterns become visible in a way that's almost hypnotic. It's like watching the same movie with slightly different actors each time.
Which is its own kind of failure. Not a failure of execution, but a failure of imagination. The algorithm has determined what people want, and the algorithm is not interested in surprise.
That connects to something I've been thinking about throughout this conversation. The worst television isn't always the most incompetent. Sometimes it's the most calculated. The show that's been optimized to death, where every edge has been sanded off, where nothing unexpected can happen. That's a different kind of bad, but it might be the most depressing kind.
Because it's not even trying to be good. It's trying to be sufficient.
That's the real difference between the worst movies phenomenon and the worst TV phenomenon. Bad movies are often the result of overreach. Someone tried to make something great and failed spectacularly. Bad TV is often the result of underreach. Someone tried to make something adequate and succeeded all too well.
Which is why the fan communities around bad TV tend to be smaller and more niche. It's harder to get excited about adequacy.
Though they do exist. There are forums dedicated to cataloging the worst episodes of long-running shows. There are YouTube channels that do deep dives into failed pilots. There's a whole subreddit called RyeBadTV that's been around for years. The community is there, it's just more fragmented than the bad movie community.
Probably because the viewing commitment is higher. You can watch The Room in 90 minutes and you're done. Watching all of The Cape is a 10-hour investment.
That's the barrier to entry. But for the dedicated connoisseur of failure, television offers something film can't, the slow-motion train wreck. The show that gets worse week by week, season by season, and you can track the decline in real time. There's a kind of narrative pleasure in watching something deteriorate.
The long arc of decline. It's almost tragic in the classical sense. The hero rises, achieves greatness, and then is undone by their own flaws. In this case, the flaw being nobody knew when to stop.
The hubris of the renewal. And we're seeing this play out in real time with some current shows. I won't name names because it feels cruel, but there are several series on the air right now that are clearly past their creative peak and just because the contracts are signed, because the international sales are locked in, because ending a show means admitting it's over.
The sunk cost fallacy as entertainment strategy.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late Victorian period, a widely accepted medical theory held that the blue blood of horseshoe crabs could be injected into human patients to treat tuberculosis. The treatment was based on the observation that horseshoe crab blood clots dramatically in the presence of bacterial toxins, and several prominent physicians believed this property could be transferred to humans. The theory was particularly popular among British naval doctors stationed in the Kuril Islands, who reported, incorrectly, that local fishermen had used the technique for generations. By 1905, the practice had been completely abandoned after a series of fatal clotting incidents.
The Kuril Islands Horseshoe Crab Blood Tuberculosis Cure. Of course there is.
That's a alarming piece of medical history I'm going to spend the rest of the day not thinking about.
Where does this leave us? We've built a taxonomy of television failure. We've identified the canon. I think the open question, and maybe this is where we should leave it, is whether the current streaming model is producing more bad television, or just making the bad television more visible.
That's a hard question. The raw volume is higher. 600 scripted series a year means there's going to be more failure by sheer mathematics. But I think the visibility question is more interesting. In the broadcast era, a bad show would air, fail, and disappear. Maybe it would get a mention in a year-end worst-of list. Now, everything is archived. Everything is searchable. The Cape is streaming somewhere right now, waiting for someone to discover it.
The permanence of failure. In the old days, bad television was ephemeral. It aired once, maybe got a summer rerun, and then vanished into the archive. Now it's all preserved, like insects in amber.
That creates the possibility of rediscovery. Shows that were reviled in their time can find new audiences decades later. Not always. Some things stay buried for good reason. But the archive is there. The curious can explore.
Which is probably the best argument for the worst TV community that Daniel was asking about. It's not as organized as the bad movie community, but the raw materials are more abundant than ever. The complete works of television failure are available on demand.
That's a strange kind of cultural wealth. We preserve not just the masterpieces, but the disasters. The full range of human creative ambition, including the parts that went horribly wrong.
I find that comforting. It means failure isn't erased. It's part of the record. Future generations will be able to watch Cop Rock and wonder what we were thinking.
They'll have no good answer, which is exactly as it should be.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop, for keeping this ship afloat. This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com. And if you enjoyed this taxonomy of televised disaster, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Until next time, may your viewing be terrible in the best possible way.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.